A few days ago, demonstrators in Bahrain marked a year since Saudi Arabian forces entered their country to help the Al Khalifa regime crack down on peaceful protests. It's been a year since the rulers destroyed Pearl Square, the focal point of protests. Now people call it Martyr Square, and they're still turning out calling for an end to oppression. With the evolution of the revolution, people's demands have radicalized. They were calling for reforms within the ruling monarchy. But as the Saudi-backed brutal crackdown continues, people are now asking for the fall of the regime. Stay with us for another edition of News Analysis.
In Bahrain, thousands of people have expressed their anger at the ruling Al Khalifa regime as they mourned another protester killed by regime forces. People have mourned 27-year-old Sabri Mahfoud. He died when police fired tear gas at him and a group of protesters at a funeral rally. He is the latest victim to be killed at the hands of the government. This just 24 hours after the death of 41-year-old Jafar Jassim Radi. He was found dead in his home after inhaling tear gas fired at his residence by regime forces. Bahrain has been witnessing a revolution since mid-February last year. Scores have lost their lives, many of them under torture in prison. Thousands more have been arrested. The protesters want justice and the downfall of the Al Khalifa regime. The main political bloc, Al Wafaq, has slammed Saudi Arabia's interference in the country in an anniversary marking the first anniversary of the Saudi troops' deployment in Bahrain.
The continued presence, hence, of the Saudi troops has no meaning, and their continued presence continues to sabotage and harm Bahrain and makes reaching a political solution very difficult. And so we call on these troops to leave Bahrain.
The bloc also reiterated that Iran has no involvement whatsoever in the revolution in Bahrain.
A doubtful truth has been uncovered that there is no Iranian military intervention.
Bahrainis are angry with the West, especially the U.S. and the U.K., for their continued support for the British-founded ruling Al Khalifa family. They have burnt the U.S. flag on numerous occasions to show their anger at Washington's support. The U.S. has faced mounting criticism for turning a blind eye to what is happening in Bahrain, the home to its 5th Naval Fleet, while preaching the promotion of human rights and democracy.
Joining me now live from London is Mr. Dominic Kawakep with the Bahrain Justice and Development Movement. And also with us live from Wisconsin is Dr. Kevin Barrett, author and Islamic studies expert. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for being with us on this edition of News Analysis. My first question to our guest in London, Mr. Kawakep, despite the Saudi-backed deadly crackdown, the protest movement has not lost its momentum. Why and how long do you expect this movement to continue?
I think it will continue up until the point when they achieve genuine democracy, and I think they've shown that so clearly over the past year. Just on March the 9th, a couple of weeks ago, we had the biggest political demonstration in Bahrain's history. Between, you know, we don't know exactly, but between 250,000 and 400,000 people came out onto the streets that day to demand democracy. So you're absolutely right. They are not going away. They're continuing to come out on the streets, and they're continuing to be met with a very brutal crackdown. Tomorrow, the Implementation Commission of the Bahrain Independent Commission of Inquiry, which was set up by the king, will report back to the king about its implementation, how far it's achieved its recommendations. And it will be another big lie to the world. They will stand there and say that Bahrain is reforming, that they have changed, that there's no more excessive force being used. But quite clearly, we've seen that's not the case. Another two protesters killed at the weekend, which is now 25 in this year alone, 78 altogether, showing that there is still absolutely a brutal crackdown taking place. But the people will not back down. With every martyr that happens in Bahrain, I believe that there will be more people coming out onto the streets, more people protesting, more people demanding freedom and democracy, and that will continue to happen. And that's why there needs to be reform. There needs to be reform now. There needs to be democratic reform stemming from dialogue. If that doesn't happen, then the people will continue to go out on the streets. They've made that very, very clear.
Dr. Barrett, do the people of Bahrain have any other option, though, but to keep up these peaceful protests? In other words, what do they need to do, do you think, to have those reforms or to have those demands of theirs met?
Well, the people of Bahrain are going to need a lot of patience because they're unfortunately not being helped out by the West and the usual suspects who run around the world trumpeting their human rights concerns. Here in Bahrain, we have a genuine nonviolent democracy movement. It's not clouded by issues of civil war, outside provocateurs. It is a movement that represents clearly the majority of the Bahraini people. In Syria, by contrast, polls taken by the Qatar government have showed that more than 55% of the Syrian people actually support their government. Mm. It's a much more complex situation there. But in Bahrain, it's a straightforward, peaceful, pro-democracy movement that's being brutally repressed and has been now for more than a year.
So a comparison there between the situation in Bahrain and Syria. And that brings me to the next question. Mr. Kawakib in London, when we are looking at the situation in Bahrain and comparing it to the revolutions that took place in the Arab world, to the situation, the unrest that we're seeing now in Syria, we're not seeing, however, the same reaction, are we? What do you think has caused Saudi Arabia to get itself involved militarily directly in the case of Bahrain a year since it first entered Bahrain? And now, in the case of Syria, going in the opposite direction and saying that that's a country which needs reforms and we're going to help the opposition there?
Well, of course, that smacks of hypocrisy. It's quite ridiculous to hear those sort of statements coming from, you know, Saudi Arabia and other countries. I think it really shows that they're more concerned about their own interests in the region than democracy. You know, of course, that's the case. They've made it quite clear that whilst they will try and, you know, push for change in other countries where it suits them, there is absolutely no chance they will ever accept democratic reforms taking place in the Gulf region. That is unacceptable to Saudi Arabia. That's unacceptable to them, you know, at the moment and for the foreseeable future, because they know that that will clearly have a negative impact on their own chances of rule in their own country, because you know, their power in Saudi Arabia is... It's not exactly the strongest in the world anyway, and I think they really genuinely fear democratic uprisings in the Gulf, because that will put them in even more danger. So that's why we've seen that happen, and it is a shame that that Bahrain hasn't received the same level of international support that other countries have, and actually, you know, we've seen here in Britain, John Yates, former police chief, taking over to supposedly reform Bahrain's police system. But he's been in a position now since the end of December 2011, and as we've clearly seen, nothing has really changed since he's been in power. 25 people have been killed, and that shows that, you know, whilst international governments might think they might be trying to help here and there, in reality it's just simply not helping, and they need to start making quite clear statements which will criticize the Bahrain government, which will call immediately for democratic reform now. That's what they need to do, and they're not doing it at the moment.
Dr. Barrett, let's look at the international response to the situation in Bahrain. One question is, could the Bahraini regime have survived this without the support that it got from Saudi Arabia and without also the political and diplomatic support that it got from the United States as well? In other words, how have these countries influenced the course of the revolution in Bahrain?
Well, the Saudis actually invaded Bahrain and put down the popular democracy movement last year. Without that invasion, things might have continued building and the regime would not have been able to survive. And again, this is a case of just rank hypocrisy. Imagine what would happen if, let's say, Iran were to send its forces into Syria to protect the government. There would, the Americans and their lackeys around the world would be screaming from the rooftops. But here, the Saudi regime, which is a totally dictatorial monarchy, invaded a neighboring country to put down these peaceful pro-democracy protests, and did so successfully. And, of course, the U.S., which has its Fifth Fleet based in Bahrain and which uses the Saudi dynasty to maintain corporate bankster control of the world dollar and oil system, didn't mind at all. So I think it's clear that the Americans and the Saudis are behind this propping up of a regime whose days are clearly numbered.
And one question that's also being asked, Mr. Kawakib, is how rather weak. Has the Bahraini regime become in the face of these protests? A lot of people had been analyzing this and saying, actually, the Bahraini regime is not making its own decisions. It's getting its orders on how to deal with the protests from the likes of Saudi Arabia and the United States. Even when it comes to the case of initiating dialogue with parts of the opposition, even when it comes to initiating some kind of reform. What do you think?
Yeah, I think that's true. I think that the Bahrain government relies extremely heavily on Saudi Arabia. They rely heavily on their influence, and they are not able to make political decisions for themselves without first having say-so from Saudi. Not even political decisions, even any sort of decisions, social or economic. That, you know, is really actually a bit embarrassing for Bahrain that is the case. But that is simply how it is. And it's absolutely right to say that the government in Bahrain has become very much weakened since these protests have begun. It's actually opened up real splits inside the ruling family. You know, there is very much a hardline wing inside the Al Khalifa family, whilst there is a more moderate wing. And it's very clear that hardline wing takes its command completely from Saudi Arabia. That's their style of governance, and that's what's causing many of the problems for Bahrain, because the Bahrain people are not only struggling for democracy against their own rulers, they're struggling for democracy against Saudi Arabia as well. And everybody knows just how powerful Saudi Arabia really is in the world, and you know how much support they receive from Western governments, and that's what makes it just so much harder for the Bahraini people. And that's really why it shows the real strength of the Bahraini people, that considering what they are fighting against, not just their own rulers but other rulers as well, it shows how strong they are, that they keep coming out onto the streets to protest, as we say, in a completely peaceful, non-violent way, continuing to do that day and night. I mean, that's incredible.
And Dr. Barrett, let's look at how the United States, as leading international efforts of the United Nations, has been reacting to these revolutions. We saw, for instance, in the case of Libya, or now in the case of Syria, when it's not in favor of the rulers, it does call for military intervention, it does call for even equipping the opposition with arms, whereas in the case of Yemen, we saw the United States and Saudi Arabia teaming up and calling for a political solution and even giving immunity from prosecution to the Yemeni ruler. What kind of a solution do you think they're looking for in the case of Bahrain? Do you think that they're going to ask the Bahraini rulers to forego some of their powers?
Well, it's possible that they would be pushing some kind of compromise on the Bahraini rulers. I think the U.S. and its allies are still trying to maintain this neo-imperial control of the Middle East in order to maintain their dollar oil hegemony over the world. And to do that, they have tried to guide the Arab revolutions toward something other than real democracy. Because when you really get down to it, in the region, if there were real democracy, the U.S. empire and its Zionist accomplices would be voted right out of the region. So they can't allow the region to genuinely democratize. So what they're trying to do is destabilize certain areas. Libya and Syria have been the victims of this kind of destabilization. And then to try to stabilize others that perhaps really need to be changed. And I think the Gulf oil sheikdoms are the places that really need democratization more than any other part of the Middle East, because they're the oil hub that really has the power by way of this control of oil supplies by a very small population that's being propped up by the Western bankers and imperial governors.
Mr. Kawakeb, I'd like to have your view on that as well. Now, what kind of a solution do you think awaits Bahrain? Of course, do you think that what the people are asking for, of course, is the downfall of the regime? Do you think that is what's going to be achieved? Or do you think, like the case we saw in Yemen, there's going to be a political settlement with still the same people in power, or parts of the authority of the rulers being relinquished? What's your opinion?
Well, I'm not sure that the people are entirely calling for the downfall of the regime. I think there are different opinions inside the opposition movement. some which are calling for constitutional monarchy, some which are calling for, you know, key democratic demands, some are calling for the downfall of the regime. I don't think it's, you know, for me to sit here and say what should be the solution. But I think, you know, that there are a number of demands across the opposition movement which are repeated throughout, which are, you know, an end to the human rights violations, an end to torture, you know, a democratically elected government, you know, all these sort of demands are absolutely essential, and they should be met. Now, you know, whether they will be or won't be, it really depends on, you know, if there is real international pressure against Bahrain to make these demands happen. And, you know, the past year has proven that, you know, alone the Bahrain government will not reform itself. You know, that's been made absolutely clear. So there does need to be some kind of, you know, external pressure. And that hasn't come about so far. So at the moment there is a political stalemate. The opposition have put forward that they will engage in dialogue. Just today a statement was put out by a number of opposition parties, including Al-Wafaq, who said that they are, you know, ready for dialogue, but it has to be dialogue which is preluded by an end to the human rights violations and the release of political prisoners. How can, as Obama himself said a few months back, how can there be a dialogue with the opposition when many opposition leaders are in prison? You know, they need to be released. There needs to be, you know, real discussions, real dialogue for the way forward. That's the only, for me, that's how I see the solution emerging. I mean, other people have different opinions, but I think that's probably a good way to go forward.
Well, that's the question, isn't it? Dr. Barrett, looking at the situation in Bahrain, we had a committee months ago investigating allegations of torture and crimes, and that committee concluded that the Bahraini regime has actually carried out torture against prisoners. We've had death sentences for opposition activists. They're still in prison. And as our guest in London was saying, none of these reforms have happened in order, as a precondition rather, to initiate that dialogue. And we only had the king saying in one instance that the constitution recognizes no such thing as an organized opposition in Bahrain. So will the regime ever accept political reforms?
Well, that's a very good question. I agree that the stopping torture, releasing the opposition leaders who are in prison now, it should be a precondition for any kind of real dialogue and negotiations. I understand there are hundreds of opposition leaders in prison, and the crackdown has continued unabated. The regime troops have continued to fire vast amounts of tear gas into neighborhoods, into people's homes, as well as using it in a way that's clearly a breach of international law against demonstrations. There's been live fire directed against neighborhoods, not just demonstrators, but just the neighborhoods that support them. It's very much a one-sided picture of extreme state repression against a nonviolent movement. Again, unlike what we saw in Libya and Syria. So I would agree with the other guest that we need some kind of change in government policy to basically agree that the opposition does have a place and the leaders need to be released from jail and we need to see some kind of a truce in the streets.
And Mr. Kawakeb, why do you think this has not been happening up until now? Would you say that Saudi Arabia is urging the Bahraini regime not to give those concessions and not to initiate this kind of dialogue? What's the reason behind the regime's refusal to give these kinds of rather, not concessions, but rather meet these preconditions, as you say, for dialogue?
Well, I think the problem really is that If the government accepts tomorrow to have a real genuine dialogue, which, you know, gives the opposition the kind of the power, if you like, in any discussions that their support amongst the population warrants, then the government knows that it's in this extremely bad situation. You know, the numbers, the figures of people who've been coming out onto the streets is so large that the government cannot ignore that it is a minority. It's a minority government ruling over a population and who are majoritively against them. And I think that's really one of the biggest issues. That's why the government is so scared to engage in reform, in dialogue. I mean, it had this dialogue back in June, the beginning of June, where they started this dialogue program and gave the opposition you know, a completely unfair number of delegates to discuss. They gave them absolutely no power. It was not an even-handed discussion. It was stacked completely in the government favour. So the government shown back then that any dialogue that happens, they want to keep themselves on top of the situation. They don't want to allow themselves to be portrayed as that minority, which is exactly what they are. That's one of the biggest issues. They really feel that, you know, their time is up. They feel scared, and that's why they can't empower the opposition. That's why these problems continue to exist. Mm-hmm.
Dr. Barrett, of course, we're seeing the Bahraini protesters out on the streets. At the same time, they're not getting any kind of concrete international support in their revolutionary move. There's been enough evidence of human rights abuses, of torture in the case of Bahrain, violations of human rights. What can human rights organizations do about this? Why have we seen a muted response from the United Nations on this? Even we have the reports of poisonous tear gas being used on protesters, killing protesters, and this poisonous gas report says is being supplied by the United States. What can the UN do about this?
Well, what the UN should do about it, of course, is to give it the attention it deserves. But it appears that many of our leading human rights organizations, like much of the Western corporate media, is functioning more and more as a tool of propaganda for empire rather than an honest broker. And that's a shame. The United Nations has had its moments of relative independence and honesty. But this is not one of them. So let's hope that popular pressure driven by the democratization of the media environment, of which Press TV is a big part, will lead to more and more people around the world seeing that in this case, Bahrain is clearly a democracy, peaceful democracy movement being brutally repressed. We need to put more attention on this. We need to get international investigations. We need to direct the human rights organizations to look at this, not to be obsessed with what the corporate media masters here in the West are telling them to look at, which right now, of course, is Syria. We need to take have some popular pressure on these organizations, and maybe the UN will start doing its job in Bahrain.
Mr. Kawakeb, do you think that without that kind of international support, even in the form of political pressure on the rulers, that the Bahraini revolutionary movement can move forward and can achieve success?
I mean, I think it's difficult to say because, you know, there has been stalemate over the past few months. People are continuing to protest. There's been loads of crackdowns, et cetera, et cetera. So I think you would have to say that the people of Bahrain do really need that international support. But, you know, I think what's interesting is actually that you would probably say that amongst the people of the world, at least, the Bahraini people do have a large amount of support. You know, over the past couple of weeks, it might seem like a small thing, but on Twitter, Bahrain hashtags have been trending worldwide continuously. You know, showing that there are a lot of people who are talking about the situation in Bahrain. There are a lot of people on the ground who support the Bahraini protests, who support the movement. There are human rights organizations such as Amnesty International, Human Rights Watch, Human Rights First, who have talked about the situation in Bahrain and continue to do that. And that's great. So it seems, you know, at least on one level, the people of the world are supporting the Bahraini uprising. They are supporting democracy. It's only rulers, it's leaders who are hesitant in doing so. And they're hesitant in doing so because of the power of Saudi Arabia. I mean, obviously because they don't want to upset the Bahrain government.
Right. All right, I'm afraid we've run out of time. A big thank you there to Dominic Kawakeb in London with the Bahrain Justice and Development Movement, and also author and Islamic studies expert Dr. Kevin Barrett joining us live from Wisconsin. Thank you very much, gentlemen, for your thoughts from Mihoma Lezgi and the rest of the team here in Tehran. Until our another news analysis program, it's goodbye.